Are you ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain!
I can't hear you!
Aye, aye, Captain!
Oh!
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley and I'm joined by Terry DeFellon.
Hello.
Yeah, no Yan this week.
Nope.
So it's just me and you.
Yep. Got the comfy chairs out.
Yeah, got the comfy chairs. We sat down. Normally we stood up, aren't we?
Yeah.
But today we're sat down.
We can lounge.
I've been on holiday.
You have been on holiday.
Yeah, you wouldn't have known it if you were just listening, but obviously we didn't have a podcast last week.
No.
You may not have noticed that, but there are so many podcasts around.
I know, there are. You do wonder whether or not people notice, don't you, sometimes?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, because there's just so many.
There are.
I think I would notice it, because I don't listen to that many podcasts now. I've cut down quite a lot of my podcasts.
Yeah.
So I do notice it when one of them takes a break.
Yeah.
But I think that if you're an avid podcast listener, you may even welcome the break just because it cuts down on the slate.
I would imagine so. I mean, like, you know, even if you were just listening to us and the old iron horses of podcasting, a few years ago, all you would have needed to do was listen to us, listen to Guardian Football Weekly, listen to The Ramble, and a couple of other ones as well, you know, Two-Footed Tackle in there or something like that. And that would have been it. You would have been fine, wouldn't you?
Yeah, maybe your club podcast if you had a club podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
And the likelihood is if you supported a big club, you would have your club podcast. But yeah, that would be a lot. But now there is literally one for every day of the week. In fact, there's probably two or three for every day of the week. It's a goal.
Yes, we've got the iPad with the Arsenal-Man United game on at the moment because we record 9 o'clock Monday night, unless I'm not in the country.
Without fail. Well, apart from last week, which we,
We've already explained. But when I was on holiday, I went to a football match.
Yes.
And if you follow us on our Twitter stream, then you will know that I was at a football match because I was live tweeting it.
Yes. Fair.
I wasn't just enjoying the moment, was I?
No, you were there. You were creating content.
But to be fair, I was waiting for breaks in play to do that.
Well, yeah, you don't want to be rude.
I didn't take pictures. I wasn't taking videos or anything like that.
No.
So I'm thinking I was doing an acceptable level of social media interaction.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
And I'm a content creator. I mean,
well, that is, that's what you do.
Yeah. I'm not like these bozos who are just taking videos of corners, you know. I'm not that much of a loser. Well, I might be, but I'm not really. So, but the game was an absolute cracker.
Tell us about it.
Well, okay, I will do.
Good,
because it was Eibar, or it's Eibar, I think is the pronunciation. It's a little town, probably about 30 kilometres out of Bilbao.
Mm.
So, right in the heart of the Basque Country.
Mm.
It's a town of about 27,000 people, wedged in this river valley. And it's a long, thin town, really, really congested. There's loads of high-rise buildings, but in this tiny, tiny, small area. And the ground is minute. The most they've ever had there is 5,800, I think, for the Barcelona game. At this game, so this is Sevilla, so it's not a small team, and there wasn't even 5,000 people in the stadium for it. They're doing a lot of work on there at the moment, but I don't think I've been in a smaller all-seater stadium. It was tiny. It was weird because I kept going through the whole game thinking about grounds I've been to, and especially the small ones, because the pitch was narrow as well. It really reminded me of an even smaller version of somewhere like Loftus Road, where the stands are so close to the pitch. And the stand we were in was raised as well. So there was only 6 rows in front of me, only 5 rows behind me. But I couldn't see the linesman at all.
Oh, really?
I could just about see his head.
Okay.
So when the ball was on the touchline, I couldn't see it. And there would have been nowhere in that stand where you could do it.
I see what you mean by raised now. Yeah.
The Wikipedia entry has it as, I think, 65 metres across, which is the same as Craven Cottage.
Mm.
And that's very compact as well.
Mm.
I think the closest I think of about the size-wise is the Johnny Haynes stand at Craven Cottage, the old stand, which is that very, very compact
Yeah.
But I think even that, I think that seats.
I was going to say that goes back up. Yeah. That's still, you know, in relative terms, still pretty big.
Yeah.
I don't know what the smallest stadium, all-seater stadium that I've been to, but it's nothing like that. I mean, it's nothing comparable to that, I don't think. I mean, in terms of, you know, league grounds, but even then, no, we'd be talking about stadiums with terracing.
Yeah.
Not all-seater.
No, exactly. It was, if you think about grounds like some of the bigger non-league grounds that we've been to, like, say, Kings Meadow or Champion Hill, those are comparable. I think they must be about 4,000 or 5,000 in there. But of course, most of that is standing.
But that's probably... I mean, it would be weird. Champion Hill would be weird if they converted that to all seater.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the last place on earth. Not because of its culture and fan base, it's the last ground on earth that would ever do that. But I mean, I would imagine that probably what you experienced at A-Bar might be similar if it was Champions, or even if they were to convert. I guess Gander Green Lane at Sutton United is probably another one where that, if that were to be sort of like filled out.
Yeah,
if they have ambitions of proper league football, and you know, then that would be filled out. Then that would probably how it would be. But it's interesting because I think we might be moving further and closer towards some kind of standing.
Yeah,
and now I think we're closer to it now than we have ever been.
Yeah,
but we'll need to get a bit closer still before it really happens. But you know, Celtic have been talking about putting it in, and I think some stadiums actually kind of are ready for it.
Yeah.
While at the same time not having it.
Molyneux did have a section for it. I think they've actually put a section in there.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. I was racking my brains as to which stadium it was that I had heard this, and yes, it is the Molyneux, correct?
Yeah. I love the experience. It's a very modern stadium, so it's not like you've got pillars or anything like that. You just, the only obstruction is obviously you can't see the first yard on the side of the pitch.
That's so weird, isn't it?
It was very weird. But the game was a blinder, an absolute blinder. Eibar, this was only their second game at home. They played four away games, and they've had a lot of construction going on there. So I wonder if they'd actually moved one of the games away. Bit of overrunning building work because they're filling in the corners, but the corners are so small. I think they've put a media centre, I think, in one of the corners there. So I mean, they've been a top flight team now for six seasons. Actually,
is it six seasons?
Yeah, they should have gone down in the first season, but I think Elche, there was financial
shenanigans.
And they got relegated. So Eibar got reprieved. And they've made hay since. Actually, they've had a couple of top half finishes as well.
Yeah, they have. I'm surprised that such a small club is able to survive in La Liga. But I don't know whether that speaks to like the peculiarities of the league itself, or whether or not they're being looked after by an ownership that's pumping in lots and lots of money. My experience of watching La Liga is that you've got some really, really strong teams there.
Yeah.
And we're not just talking about, and it's more than just, oh, you know, Real and Barca are the top two. That isn't the case now.
No.
La Liga is genuinely strong. But I think there are sort of like teams in that league that you would look at and think, you know, I wonder how that team would cope in, you know, in England or in Germany or in France, you know, and whether or not they still have their same status. So I'm not quite sure what Eibar are, because I've not seen enough of them to know.
They look like a team that doesn't have a lot of overheads, because
really,
unlike,
how did they play? Did they look good?
They played really good attacking.
They
football.
Weren't agricultural or anything.
No,
like that.
No. I mean, the first half they had a lot of energy, but they were pushing up quite a lot and leaving big gaps at the back. And Sevilla hit them on the counter twice. Really were sucker punches. Really. To say that Eibar didn't really deserve to be going in at half time 2-0, 1-0 maybe, but 2-0 seemed a bit rough on them. But they came out the second half as they finished the first half, and that was attacking, continually attacking. They rejigged it a bit in defence, but still after 65 minutes they were two goals down. And then the fight back happened, and Sevilla just sort of did a bit of Keystone Cops defending at the back. and three goals came in 17 minutes, and the crowd went bananas.
The crowd, such as they were, went bananas.
Yeah, it was, but because it's so compact, you get a great atmosphere from the 5,000 people there.
Oh, that's good. So it's not a library or anything like that.
No, not at all, not at all. And the weird thing is that even with Sevilla there, there were some Sevilla fans there, but if they came up from Andalusia, that's over 1,000 miles round trip.
Mm.
So I saw at least one flag for Madrid Sevilla fans. In the two little enclaves of them that I could see, there was probably no more than about 40 or 50 of them. But there was quite a few empty seats, which I thought for a club like Sevilla was in a ground this small.
Yeah.
But then one of the guys we go to Whiteleaf with was a season ticket holder at Deportivo, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's
even
right.
Though he lives without lives
in Whiteleaf.
Yeah, but he goes over three or four times a year, and it's worth it because it's dirt cheap to go out to buy a season ticket, and he can pick his weekends and go and see the big clubs, see the fixtures he wants to go and see. So I think that's what happens a lot. And it was a 7 o'clock kickoff, so people may not have been. There were a lot of people coming in late.
Thursday, was it not?
It was a Thursday. It was a midweek round. The previous weekend, we'd been in San Sebastian when Sociedad were playing away and Bilbao were playing at home. And we knew that our last weekend was going to miss it the same way. So, but we had this chance of seeing Eibar because we were staying in Bilbao at the time. And I thought, right, okay, well, that's very close. We can go there.
Awesome.
It was awesome. It was a great, great thing. If you do go to see Eibar, if you want to go and see there, you have to wait for the season ticket holders to cash their tickets in. But I managed to get through it on the website, so that was fine. But we did have one sticky situation, which I couldn't find my seat. This one thing I really, really hate about going to football games, especially in an unfamiliar stadium, is when someone sat in your seat. And it really does grumble. It happened to us at Dusseldorf, didn't it? There was a guy, and most of us ended up missing the first goal, didn't we?
Yeah, because we were too busy turfing them out.
Too busy turfing people out of their seats. And I'm thinking, how stupid must you be? You can't get like where you're sat. How can you be that daft? Well, in Eibar's ground, it's easy to be this daft. Where we were sat, our seats were row 7, seats number 13 and 14. But apparently, in just one half of the stand, there are 3 row 7s, seat 13s.
Mm. Okay.
And we tried them all.
But you got turfed out, did you?
We got helpfully moved on.
Okay.
When we found our one, which was in between the other two guys were probably about 15 seats away from me. it was the kind of
situation if you're regular, that you know what seats you're in.
No, because even the ones who, even the people who spoke English, and there wasn't many of them, they didn't have a clue where they were meant to be sat. No.
Oh,
so, yeah, it was, so yes, be careful of that you could fall foul of that one. But yeah, if you can get along to see one of the smaller clubs in Spain, I'd recommend it. I had a much better time there than I did when I went to Barcelona. Anyway,
well, there you go.
So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I've not been to the Camp Nou, but I keep hearing people saying that it's very, 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 very big, too big, and you know that it's a bit of a library. There's not much atmosphere.
Yeah,
because I guess probably because it's just largely populated by tourists. These days,
it probably is.
We are part of the problem in that respect. Yeah,
yeah. But it is nice to go to a smaller stadium. I mean, when we go to Germany, most of the stadiums we go to are massive.
Mm.
Obviously, we do go to a bit of non-league.
Well, they always try and see if we can find a bit of non-league.
Again, that's a non-league stadium. Tourist ground was beautiful. When we went there
It could have been Whiteleaf.
Yeah, really. Yeah, certainly. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. A little bit fancier, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, the facilities were a little bit more on point. Yeah,
they had a press conference and everything.
They had a press conference and everything. And in fairness, also, they serve beer behind their bar, which you don't always get at Whiteleaf.
No, not
sometimes
always.
The bar manager's not entirely on point. But Yeah, we had Brinkhoff's. Which is giggle juice.
Yeah.
It's giggle juice.
Right, but I'm back now. So what did I miss when I was away?
Well, you missed a bit of Champions League, actually. Yeah. You missed the first sort of like round of the Champions League.
I did see Arsenal play.
You probably didn't miss that much because it's the Champions League.
Yeah, yeah.
It's on everywhere. But you missed Liverpool losing to Napoli. But I don't know whether or not Liverpool are really prioritising the Champions League. In Germany, there's been this hilarious brouhaha about Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, the Barcelona goalkeeper, who's German,
yes.
And Manuel Neuer, who doesn't need an introduction. There's a big argument because Ter Stegen, on the last international break, made a couple of unguarded comments about how frustrating it was to be basically not play. so in Germany it's the same in England during international break. There's nothing to talk about, so they all focus on everything onto the national team. So every little comment is like turned into a story. Bayern, to their credit, added to the circus. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge and Uli Hoeneß saying that this is outrageous, and you know, Manuel Neuer is definitely the number one goalkeeper. And things escalated actually to a point where in the last few days, Uli Hoeneß, apparently, it's being reported that Bayern are threatening to not send their players to the next national team international break if Manuel Neuer is not confirmed as number one goalkeeper. So I have no idea where this has come from. A bit of collective madness going on there, or everyone is just having a massive giggle. It's very, very, very funny and very silly. Anyway, but the point is, in all of this, Ter Stegen went to Germany with Barcelona and played an absolute blinder in Barcelona's 0-0 draw with Dortmund, including saving the most amazing penalty from Marco Reus. I mean, it was, and he almost saved it in slow motion. It was extraordinary. It was a really, seek it out the next, when you finished here. It was extraordinary save. And that, of course, helped the narrative along really nicely. Just when we all thought that story was dying down, along comes Ter Stegen to sort of like really boost it up and put in a stellar performance and keep Barcelona in the game. It's a game Dortmund should have won. So there's that been going on, and that's really what you missed. Oh, and Pep's a racist, by the way.
Oh, yes. I did hear about that.
Pep, I've heard you're a racist now.
Yes.
But I must confess, I've not paid much attention to that.
No.
Because I just can't be doing with that.
No.
To be honest with you.
No.
It's just not a world I want to live in anymore.
No, and there are people who are going to have opinions that are far more valid than ours.
Yeah,
I think on that.
Yeah,
and we'll be able to give a much more nuanced opinion.
I would rather listen to what people have to say about that than express an opinion.
Yes,
I don't believe anything is benefited from my opinion being added into that mix.
Oh dear! If only the press were so.
I know. We're just like saying. So yeah, maybe we should pay attention to what other people are saying rather than just telling people what to think.
Yes.
Granit Xhaka on the. Yeah, there you go. Your new captain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, should we have a talk about that then?
Let's have a talk about that.
Because we're about a quarter of an hour in now, and we haven't really come up with a subject other than my holiday and finding out really what's going on. Yeah. Sometimes I need to listen to a podcast, and so I've just listened to this one for the last quarter of an hour. But one thing I did know is that Arsenal have chosen a new captain.
Mm.
And this seems to make headlines now and seems to get Twitter a-twittering. Granit Xhaka is now the new Arsenal captain after much of Arsenal Twitter saying that we should have got rid of him in the summer.
They're trolling Arsenal Twitter, aren't they?
Yes.
By doing this. They're saying we're going to make Granit our skipper.
Yes.
Because, you know, this is how wrong we think you are about him.
And then Arsenal Twitter have trolled them back saying, well, this is a great move because actually we always end up selling our captains. So it's great. That means he's out the door. So part of the conversation that has been going around is, you know, why is this news? And why on earth would anyone want to discuss it on a podcast? Because in the modern day and age, in this modern day and age of micromanagement of and microanalysis of players, surely is there any room for a captain, or is there any purpose of a captain beyond just some figurehead?
I think we can give that a 10 minute conversation.
We'll do our best.
We can do, can't we?
I mean, football analytics measure almost every aspect of the game, don't they?
Yeah.
And that includes, you know, that includes the psychological as well. You know, there's a lot of work is done on the personality of the players and helping them and helping them with their any problems that they might have. And all of this is done to a very, very high level and a high standard. And so you would think that allowing players to decide their captain wouldn't, there's got to be at least one metric to determine who the best captain is.
Mm.
And I'm now wondering whether or not actually it doesn't really matter who the best captain is, because the captain's role is largely redundant. It's ceremonial.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit like the Queen and Parliament, you know.
He's just got to be lied to.
He's just there to be lied to. And, you know, if you're lucky, lift the occasional trophy and shake hands at the beginning of each game. But beyond that, the role of captain seems to be one that is more of importance to the team rather than to, you know, the management and coaching. So if there wasn't, otherwise they would just say, well, actually, we've measured, you know, the various physical and psychological metrics of all of your players, and we've determined that that guy is the best captain, so he is going to be the captain. But it's nice to see elements of football where that isn't happening. Not that I can, I mean, all on board with analytics and stuff like that. I mean, it's all good as far as I'm concerned. So when I say it's nice, I mean that it's nice. I'm not making a political statement about the modern game. It's just, it is nice that sometimes a group of, you know, fans, can, or players rather, could get together and just, you know, decide, you know. And they had a vote. And, you know, it's important, you know, Arsenal fans have got to realise that, you know, the players have had a vote and that vote's got to be respected.
I wonder how many people voted for him. I wonder if he got 52%.
I reckon 52%. It was 52%. Yeah.
52% of the squad.
Yeah.
Well, actually, probably wasn't 52% of the squad. I think it's 52% of the squad that bothered voting.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it was actually only about five people, five players.
And I bet half the teenagers in here were excluded from
it. They couldn't go. I mean, probably in about 3 weeks' time, because obviously football moves very, very quickly, those players will be going, oh, I wish I'd bloody voted in that captain's election. I wish I hadn't thought it was a load of old rubbish. Look at him, he's rubbish, old Granit Xhaka. He's rubbish. But I think it's important for Arsenal Twitter that they have to respect the vote and not to block the will of the people.
Well, I suppose there is, for a fan's perspective, I suppose the job of the captain is the leader on the pitch, and I suppose that he is the one who has to seem to be the embodiment of the club as well, the one who's going to take the game by the scruff of the neck, isn't it? I think that's what most people look for in a captain.
And that's the peculiar thing about choosing Xhaka, is if, well, maybe this is only Arsenal Twitter, maybe actually in the actual stadium it's different, but if Arsenal Twitter is anything like going to the Emirates, then you would think that Xhaka was not the most popular player because of, you know, he's a bit of a live wire. He's a bit anarchic.
Yes.
You know, I think he's great, Granit Xhaka, but then I don't support Arsenal, so I think it's fine.
Yeah, you probably think Socrates is great as well, don't you?
I do. Well, that's because Socrates is great, but only because he doesn't play for Dortmund anymore. It's somebody else's problem. Not that Dortmund don't have the problems of their own, by the way, but I mean, you know.
But Arsenal have been fielding for the last few games. They've had David Luiz and Socrates.
Oh, I bet it's been so much fun.
No, fun is not a word I would use with that. It's been fun for everyone else, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I meant. But, I mean, Xhaka is the thing about Xhaka is oftentimes, when people criticise Xhaka, they tend to look at, talk about metrics, they'll look at metrics that aren't actually his strong points, and then they'll ignore the metrics that are actually his strong points. And that's what I think tends to happen when the narrative takes over the reality. And fortunately, football coaches and indeed football players look at football differently to the way the rest of us do. They look at it in a much more accurate way, and they strip the narrative out. We're always Adam Curtising, you know, football.
Yeah, there are some shocking statistics, but they are still small numbers, like the number of crucial penalties he's given away.
Mm.
But
if someone's given away four penalties, four or five, I don't know what the number is, but it's that sounds like a lot, but it is actually a very small sample, so it can be skewed with just a couple of incidents.
Yeah.
When you're watching him, you do feel like he is a penalty waiting to happen. Yeah, when he's defending in the box.
But I mean, I think that a lot of this is systemic as well. I mean, if your players are making desperate last-ditch tackles in the box, then you're doing something wrong. You're not doing modern football correctly. And that's where the manager has to take some stick, because, you know, you say you can't be doing that. But then, you know, again, if you've got Socrates and David Luiz as your back, as your centre-back pairing, then your defensive midfielder is going to be given a bit of a hard time. And I think it's a bit rough to point the finger at that. But I realise it's broader than that, and that, you know, it's not just when it's those two playing. But I hopefully, you know, detractors of Granit Xhaka will see the point. I mean, he was pretty stable at Borussia Mönchengladbach. But, I mean, I think I said when it was announced that you guys signed him, one of the first things I said on this podcast about him was that he likes a red card.
Yes.
And so, but I mean, I think that that's kind of part of the package now, particularly in the modern game, because, you know, it's easier to get red cards if you're a physical defensive midfielder.
But of course, in addition to what they convey on the pitch, I suppose really a team captain is also something off the pitch as well for the players. He is basically the staff rep, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah, that's true, I suppose, yeah.
So not like a union rep, no.
Not
a shop steward, no. Yeah, a staff representative and maybe the voice that the players can go through, which can be a good or bad thing. I mean, there was often talk about the fact that John Terry's influence at Chelsea was enough to get rid of managers.
Mm.
Now, he's always lauded as a great captain for that club.
Mm.
But is that too much power to have, or should the playing unit be able to manage upwards as well as downwards?
Well, I would be very surprised if any Arsenal captain in this day and age would have that kind of influence.
Yeah.
And I would be also surprised if any Chelsea captain now would have that kind of influence. John Terry was a career Chelsea and you know, was, as they say, a legend.
Mm.
And, you know, in fairness, had earned that status, which I think gave him additional status over everything else. I wouldn't imagine that Granit Xhaka would have that kind of clout. I think it's worth bearing in mind that he's Swiss, so the likelihood is he speaks at least three different languages. And in a multicultural dressing room, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah,
So that's something else that is worth thinking about. I mean, obviously he speaks German and French, presumably, and obviously he'll speak English. So, and that's, you know, maybe there are others as well. So, in fact, he's Albanian, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because his brother plays for Albania.
He does indeed. They played against each other.
They did indeed in the Euros. Yeah. So he's probably a, you know, multilingual. These things, I think, are very helpful. It's also worth bearing in mind, any joking aside, the important community work that Arsenal do and the players will do for the club, you know, in terms of community outreach. And this is something that does still happen at football clubs. And he will have responsibilities in that area that have nothing to do with the playing of football, but are nevertheless still vital roles within keeping, you know, football. I know, but people say, oh, football's all business now and they don't care anymore. But that is actually not really true. I mean, big football clubs still have roots in their local community, and there'll be various activities and hospital visits and school visits and or stuff like that. And, you know, the captain will take a role in that, and that's important. So, you know, maybe that has some bearing on it as well. Maybe, you know, you're being an ambassador as well for the club. And so, you know, maybe they just thought that he was the right, he ticked all those boxes.
Yeah, because the role of England captain still seems to be quite a big deal, doesn't it?
Still, yeah, despite the attempts by our coach to persuade people that it really shouldn't be a big deal. Because it got ridiculous.
Yeah.
David Beckham saw the England captaincy as being not just something that was a tremendous honour, but also, if properly exploited, something that he could make money from.
Yeah.
I don't wish to denigrate him by that.
No, but it's something he definitely caught it, didn't he?
He really got it. He loved it.
Yeah.
He absolutely loved it, and I think it was part of the package. And then he created a little bit of a legacy there, and it ended up you know, I think people getting a little bit carried away about what is really, I'd say is a ceremonial or an ambassadorial role. And I think that Gareth's done quite well in sort of like taking the eye off that. But yeah, it is still a thing. We all dream of winning, you know, a major international trophy with England, and England players will be no different. And they will dream of lifting that trophy. And it's a fine dream to have. And so when you're in that position where you're a international player, even though it is a bit of a pipe dream and people might laugh and say, ha ha, England winning a trophy. But, you know, you're not human if you don't have those kind of dreams.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's, you know, it's a powerful vision to hold for yourself and think, well, I'd like to be that guy.
Yeah, and all of these people who've caught that position have got the massive hubris of thinking that they're going to be the one.
Of course they have. But I mean, you're saying that like it's a bad thing.
No, of course it's not. If you're a professional footballer,
you have to think like that. Yeah. Otherwise, all is lost.
Yes. That's how we think when we put these podcasts.
Yeah, because we're super competitive podcasters.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you make a rival podcast, we're out for you.
Yeah, we're coming for you, Football Fives.
Yeah, we'll bury you again.
Again. You want some more?
Do you?
Back for more, eh?
Yeah. But Football Fives is back.
I know, it's back.
They're going to try and say it never went away, are they? It's just sort of like...
Nah, I don't know. I think they're pretty out. Because they're bringing in another guy, a guy called Steve Chicken, who is coming from the bench, so just to try and keep them regular.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Which is
sensible.
Is he going to be their Yan, is he? To bring in a new guy. Yeah.
Well, hopefully he'll be their Yan. Hopefully he won't be their Poochie. We don't want him to be their Poochie, because that would be just terrible.
That would be great. He'll probably do really well on there.
Those guys don't associate themselves with bad folk, so
no, they certainly don't. Right, so back on the box set this week. So we're going to have a full box set this week. You did a great job.
I did a great job.
Yeah, you did a great job. Yes.
Okay, apart from one...
Yeah, no, but hey, the opinions in there were great.
Yeah, the opinions were completely on point.
They were spot on.
Yeah, and they were spot on. It's if you read it, listeners, then you'll know how spot on our predictions were, mine and Jan's. We were on point.
You were on point. But we're back to 7 games this weekend, and then we'll take another week off because it's going to be international break off.
Yeah!
But some big games coming up this weekend. Teams that are finally making a bit of a turnaround. Hertha Berlin, after you know promising much in the summer, finally got a win. And... is everything in the garden rosy there?
Yeah, I doubt it because it's Hertha, but they've got 2 wins on the bounce, and yeah, I mean, like it's good because they had a good start to the season for one game, and then it went toilet, but now it looks like it's turning around again.
And Monaco as well, they've won a game, so they're on the upward trend as well.
Well, yes, insofar as winning a game of football can be described as that, yeah.
But you'll be able to see what else we've picked to go into the box set if you subscribe. If you don't subscribe, get along to sofpodcast.com and follow the links to Weekend Box It and just put your email address in. That's all you have to do. Mm-hmm. There's no money changing hands. We're not gonna sell your details to anyone.
Well, we might do that.
Oh, hey, I might do. Mm. Yeah, we could make some money off that, couldn't we?
Yeah, about $12.
Yeah. Hey, it'll be worth it, though.
Yeah, well worth it.
Yeah. I mean, like, so what if they get... They've got spam filters now, haven't they?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Come on.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
No, hey, we're only joking.
But no, newsletters are the way ahead, listeners. If you don't know that, then newsletters are the way ahead.
Everyone's
fed up of social media, and they're going back to email.
Yeah. It's the way ahead. We're looking at email. I'm thinking, why on earth did we stop using this? Why on earth did we go to Slack?
Well, this is the thing. We never did stop using it. I mean, we have never, of all the incredible internet innovations that there have been in the last 20, 25 years of the World Wide Web as we know it, email has been constant.
Yeah.
In fact, all the way back to the beginning of the very beginnings of the internet, people still use email. And so, yeah, of course, you're going to go to newsletters because it's the one thing you can rely on. Because everything else will go, but WhatsApp sooner or later will, you know, people will stop using that. Probably after a big scandal where it turns out it's not encrypted at all or something like that. Slack, wow.
Yeah.
They're just like one dodgy IPO away from being completely destroyed. So.
Yeah, they'll be tomorrow's Peloton, won't they?
They'll be tomorrow, yes, right. They are the WeWork of talking to people on the internet.
But that's all we have time for this week. Well, hopefully Jan will be back for next week's episode, and we'll have a full compliment again.
Yeah, and something to talk about as well.
We had something to talk about this week. We had plenty to talk about.
We've literally just been talking for the last 45 minutes.
We have indeed. But from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry the Feather, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Okay, so we'll talk about Captain's Inn, shall we? And,
let's talk
about it. But we'll talk about my Spanish holiday.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just spend half an hour talking about my...
Why don't you just do that? Yeah. I'll just sit here watching the football. Just call me if you need me. It's the podcast equivalent of a slideshow, a holiday slideshow. Well, that's what Instagram is, though, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But younger listeners,
yes,
such as they are, may not all be aware of the cultural phenomenon of the holiday slideshow, where people would invite you around and bore you rigid with an hour-long presentation of their trips away, usually to Spain, in fairness. To which everyone would get really, really bored. And that doesn't exist anymore because slide projectors just don't exist anymore.
No.
But that's what Instagram has become. Not yours, obviously. Yours was great. Beautiful photographs.
Cheers, buddy.